My session, my session, session. Who do you want me to be? Am I the emissary? All right, so this actor that plays Loran, yeah, Ackham, Slice of
Akar?
Ham, Akkar, yeah, that's it. I see I'm gonna have fun with these names. Akoram Lan. Richard
Ricotta.
Libertini.
Yeah, he's
Libertini?
Richard Libertini is all over the place. You see
Yeah, he's
him
been in
on
everything, right?
every TV show in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. He's been on it.
Yeah.
He also has a significant role in my favorite Burt Reynolds film, Sharky's Machine.
Oh. Get up the. Aw. Oh, that's kind of depressing. I just looked up.
Who's dead now?
Yeah, I know. Well, no, because I looked up the guy that played Vedic Porta. He's dead. The guy that threw the other dude off the promenade because it was Dejara.
That's. I really think we should go to a Dejara system. I'm good with that.
You sure about that? How do you
Yeah.
know what your Dejara would be?
Because I just know I'm going to be like the best Dejara ever. I'm going to be like the
What
Donald
if
Trump
your
Dejara.
Dejara is the garbage man? Although, I don't know, I'd probably like to be a garbage
Then
man, but I'll
I
deal
would
with
be
people.
like Scatman Crothers on Chico and the Man.
I'd be the Scatman Crothers. He was on Chico and the Man?
He played the garbage man.
Oh, I did not remember that.
I'd sound like Hong Kong Phooey, and I'd be picking up your garbage.
I'm here to pick up your garbage.
The only thing is, I just have to stay away from Jack
You
Nicholson because
son
he
of a
put an
bitch. Now
accent
I
to my
got
belly.
goddamn Hong Kong Phooey in my head. No, I'm
Number
just
one
I'm
super guy.
Hong Kong Phooey, quicker than a human eye. Chicka chong, chicka chong, chicka whacka whacka wong, chicka ching chong, chicka chicka chong.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Mel Robinson.
Bloody hell.
All right.
Him!
Hello, and welcome to Deep Space Nine. Or no, wait, sorry. Welcome to... I would, listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. Sorry, I was confused because I'm between du jours right now, so I'm not sure really what I'm supposed to be.
Du jours?
Du jours, that's the...
You're between days.
I'm between, you know, no, not like side items on
Is it
the
soup
card.
du jour?
Soup du jour. I am your host du jour of the episode. I am Vedic, whatever the hell you are. Yeah, I am's what I am is what I am. I'm
the
Salem man. I am's Dr. Bill, and with me is
Bluto. Well,
you two guys, whatever
Where the hell you are.
You're the co-host du jours of the day.
Okay.
Oof. So, boy. Andy and Paul, how you doing, guys?
I'm doing... After that introduction, I'm magnificent. I will never be better than that introduction.
I
Thank
we
you,
change
Bill.
Your...
Contract.
Yes.
Which is my contract.
In my Dejara.
In my Dejara, Philip? Philip? They're talking about changing the contracts again, Philip.
Oh, tell them to piss off, Lizzie.
Not gonna
They're
be
back
queen
again.
Anymore. What?
I think it's time Philip took over.
But what about Charles?
Oh, no, no, we don't want him.
He'll fly away in a strong breeze.
He's too busy talking to his plants.
But this is not a British Monarchy podcast. This is a Deep Space Nine podcast. So, Paul, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, too.
Ever since we went back to the Dejara system and I realized that I'm royalty, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, did you push a guy off a balcony or anything because he wasn't in his right Dejara?
I can neither confirm nor deny. I've been advised at the at the suggestion of council, I've been told I should not answer that question.
I see. So do we have any new news this episode, this time around? I don't think we really have any new news, because I think we covered it last episode, which was a half hour ago or so.
No new news is good new news.
Unless you're Gary Ganoos. Oh, wait. Andy may not get that.
The Ganoo? Oh,
yeah, Gary Ganoo. The Great Space Coaster?
I know the name.
Oh, okay. Yeah. There's a whole song and everything, but I don't want to sidetrack us any more than we already have been.
Too late.
Yeah, really.
Too late.
Since when?
Hey. No, I can't think of any news, so I guess we'll shall I jump into the episode proper?
Sure. Yes.
The discussion. Let's. Ascension is the... Ooh, what is this? What number episode is this? Just had this last episode. Oh, 89th episode of Deep Space Nine. We are in season 4, and as we found out last episode, we are pretty much over the middle of the show, and now we're on a downslide straight into the good life.
It's all easy from here.
That's right. It's all downhill from here. So we're in season 4, episode 17, Ascension, which was written by Jane Espenson and directed by Les Landau.
And it's the will of Landau.
Yes, exactly.
The will of Martin Landau.
Will one man...
Who are you?
I am the emissary. ...destroy an entire society?
I was sent here to help bring Bajor into the Federation.
Will one mistake...
I pushed him.
What happened on the promenade was just the beginning.
Tear apart years of diplomacy.
I have failed my mission.
Will one confrontation...
You're challenging my claim.
...push Sisko to the limit... on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
And the plot goes a little like this. An ancient Bajoran ship emerges from the wormhole. Its passenger, Akoram Lan, is a revered Bajoran poet who disappeared 200 years ago. Akoram claims to have been chosen by the prophets, who are worshipped by the Bajorans as gods, as their emissary. That might cause some tension. A role thought to belong to Captain Sisko. Sisko, being a human and a Starfleet officer, never felt comfortable being the Bajoran's messiah figure and cedes the title without resistance. Akoram believes the prophets brought him back to restore Bajor's traditional caste system, which the Bajoran people abandoned during the 50-year Cardassian... Okay, I'm going to make sure I didn't say Cardassian. Occupation. So that they could effectively organize a resistance. Akoram tells Major Kira that she must resign her military commission and become an artist, which was her family's traditional profession under the old caste system. Akoram hopes to have the caste system legally enforced by punishments such as deportation. Sisko warns Akoram that caste-based discrimination is banned by the Federation Charter, and thus would disqualify Bajor from Federation membership. Aww. But Akoram trusts in the will of the prophets. Sisko has a dream where Kyle Paca, a former spiritual leader of Bajor and an old friend of Sisko, tells him that he has lost sight of who he is. Who are you? Dr. Bashir believes that Sisko has experienced an orb shadow. I'm looking over an orb shadow. A hallucination that is known to happen to people who have been exposed to an orb of the prophets. That just sounds kind of nasty. Bajorans believe orb shadows are reminders that the prophets from the prophets to people who ignore what they've been told in a previous vision. A Bajoran priest, Porta, murders a fellow priest whose ancestors were morticians and thus would be considered spiritually unclean. Now we'll get to that. Sisko realizes that Akoram's influence will be bad for Bajor's future and challenges him for the role of emissary. They decide that the only way to settle the matter is to go into the wormhole, two emissaries enter, one emissary leaves, and ask the prophets themselves what they want. What do you want? What's in a box? Akoram and Sisko enter the wormhole and are received by the prophets. The prophets tell them that Sisko is in fact their emissary. Sorry, Akoram, thanks for playing the home game. And that they brought Akoram to the present to help Sisko appreciate the importance of his role. Akoram repents and asks for death, but Sisko pleads to have him sent back to his own time unharmed. Akoram is sent back to his own era with no memory of what happened to him in the future. Sisko is once again recognized as the emissary by the Bajorans, who are happy that they will not have to return to the caste system. This time he accepts the role happily, now that he appreciates the positive influence he has on the Bajorans. Major Kira, however, notices that Akoram's epic poem, The Call of the Prophets, which she remembers as being incomplete, now exists in its entirety, suggesting that Akoram was able to complete his masterwork after returning to the past. Isn't there a subplot missing in this synopsis?
Only Keiko and O'Brien and Bashir.
Yeah, which was like
which was a pretty significant subplot, actually.
Yeah. So they've only decided that that's completely irrelevant to the episode.
Yeah, so let me just give the summary for that. So Keiko returns after a year's absence away from the station, and it's always great when I get to do these off the cuff. Bashir and O'Brien have to clean up O'Brien's quarters because he's been living the life of a bachelor for a year and it's a pigsty. And when he meets Keiko at the docking ring, Molly is happy to tell him that she has a little brother, and O'Brien thinks it's the doll she's holding, and he goes and she says, "No, in mommy's belly." What? O'Brien looks so happy at this news. Basically they thought they were gonna, he was, you know, gonna have more fun trying to have a baby. They wanted to have a baby, and then Molly wants to play with him, then she doesn't want to play with him, and he's depressed because now his wife is back and he can't hang out with his buddy. And then Keiko finally realizes this, and she tricks them both into go hanging out together. The end.
Excellent.
Does that kind of sum up the subplot?
Yeah,
like
pretty
the most
much.
Professional synopsizer I have ever heard.
Yeah, right, whatever. I like this one. I liked it. He liked it. I liked it more than the last one.
I rather liked it as well.
It was good to see Kyo Paka again.
For the last time, I think.
For the last time, yes. I don't know. She might be in another flashback here or there, but we'll never. Yeah, she's still just sitting on that planet. Oh, what a bunch of guys fighting each other forever. Unless you can bring peace to them.
I had one issue with this case, and I'm just going to bring it in this case. I had one issue with this episode, and I want to bring it up early, get it out of the way, because it was the only thing that kind of bothered me a little bit. At the end of the episode, when Hakuna Matata is sent back to the past, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Sisko goes with him to the wormhole. They meet with the aliens.
Wait, I think I know where you're going.
He comes back alone, and nobody questions, he was sent back to the past, that's fine. Nobody says, hey, you know what, you two were kind of in competition to see who was going to be, you know, in charge here, and he's gone. Two enter, one leaves.
You know,
but nobody questions it at all.
Discharge on the runabout when you were in the wormhole. Oh, that was nothing.
Is that a valid criticism? I don't know.
A lot's being taken on that you're taking Sisko. I mean, the whole planet everybody.
People no, I'm the emissary. It's fine.
Yeah, it's like, no. They're the prophets, say I'm the emissary. Oh, you know, they're all Jim from Taxi. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, is that a kind of a slam on the Bajoran people that maybe they're, like, a little gullible? Like, you know, no. I was the emissary. Now this guy's the emissary. No. The other emissary? No, he's gone now. Now I'm the emissary. Okay, you're the emissary. Got it. Right. Who's my emissary this week?
Who's your emissary now?
Yeah, see?
I do like your 1940s mook impression.
That's Edward G. Robinson.
Is that who he was?
Yeah.
Yeah, where's your Messiah now?
He actually says that in the...
He actually says, where's your Moses now? Right?
Yeah, doesn't he say Messiah?
He might say Messiah. Yeah, I think
he actually says that in the Ten Commandments. Yeah, well, he doesn't go, yeah, see? But he does say, where's your Messiah now?
Eh, see? It's not right without that bit now.
But yeah, it's like, I still like this episode, but yes, your criticism is valid in that it's like they seem they're ready to believe whoever says they're... You would think there'd be like a more of a vetting process with the Messiah. Although, I guess if you have to vet a Messiah, then you don't have faith in him, so...
Gotta have faith.
Faith, gotta have faith. George Michael is the Messiah.
He's not the Messiah.
He's a very naughty boy. Andy's troubled by this one.
Andy's pulling out. I can hear it already.
Well, see, on the one hand, it's very well written because it's Jane Espenson, who would go on to work on Buffy, Angel, Firefly, Create, Warehouse 13, various other things. She's become one of the preeminent television script writers for this kind of telly. I think she works on Grimm as well, or Once Upon a Time, one of those two. So there's a lot of interesting moments. The characters put in interesting situations. It's another question of faith, which Star Trek does very well in Deep Space Nine with the Bajoran philosopher. I just found it a little bit dull. I guess I'm just not overly invested in the Bajoran religious system as I am in the Bajoran Cardassian political system. That just seems far more interesting to me as a viewer. And this just felt like a little bit more of the same that we've kind of already seen with Kai Winn, that there are certain people of the Bajoran faith who are so myopic that they can't see that what they're doing is wrong. And you've got two people here who he's come out of the wormhole, so he's 500 years out of sync with what he should be, and he wants Bajor to go back to what it was 500 years ago. Or however many years it is, I've forgotten.
And 200.
200 years, thank you. And they've moved on since then. They've been through a lot of stuff, a lot of heavy stuff since 200 years ago. The faith is very much one of the things that kept them going in the time of the occupation. But the idea that they should now go back to this outdated de jure thing that tells them what job they should do is now completely anathema to them.
Yeah, but the whole reason they left it was because they were forced out of it out of necessity by the occupation.
So it's like a parallel to World War II, where the men were off fighting, so the women were taking on job roles at home that the men had previously done, and so that when the men came back, the women were suddenly forced back into their role of housemaker, and they didn't want to do that anymore. They'd proven they could be better. They had moved on, and you can't go back.
I think that's a very good correlation there. I don't know if that's the message they were sending. I don't know if, you know, that seems very specific, so I don't know if that's what they were doing.
Yeah,
but I think you found a good analogy for it.
More the point that I'm making, though, is you can't go back. Once a society has moved forward, you can't go back.
And they were unsuccessful when they tried to.
Yeah.
So I think that's consistent with what you're saying.
It is, and that's why I'm umming and ahhing a bit, in the sense that I don't know then what it was that didn't interest me about this one?
Because
that's
sure.
a good theme. That's a good theme for the episode. You know, Kira is always interesting when she's on the fence, faith versus whatever, her job or whatever. Sisko's never liked being the emissary, so having to finally grasp that with both hands and embrace it is interesting, certainly as far as the show will go going forward. I kind of felt the bad guy was a bit low-key, but again, playing him as not a scene-chewing bad guy worked for the show. And I don't know what it is about this one that I thought was a little bit boring.
Well, because you know, if this guy had come back and was like, I am the emissary, that Sisko would have been like, no. I think it's better that he was more low-key and humble in his...
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
But he came back, he wasn't over-the-top aggressive, but he was very adamant. He was the emissary. He didn't... There were no ifs, ands, or buts. It wasn't, I want to be the emissary, I think I'm the emissary. It's, no, I'm the emissary. You're not, I am. I think I don't think he was...
He was a Bajor.
Mm. Because he truly believed it. Not because he was trying to be a villain or trying to do anything. He truly believed that the Prophet sent him to be the emissary. And I like that. And I think Richard Libertini, when he was alive, he's a guy who you saw virtually on every TV show in the 1970s and 1980s. He was always popping up. So he's definitely a that guy. But I think he was a really solid actor, a really solid character actor. I think he did a good job of portraying this part. I don't think he ever came off as a villain in any way in this episode. I think he truly believed in what he was doing. I don't think he had any villainous intent. I don't even think he had any megalomaniacal intent. I think he truly believed he was doing what was the will of the prophets, not because he wanted to take control, but because he believed they wanted him to take control. And I found it very engaging. I thought this was a solid episode, to be honest with you. I think, like I said, the one criticism I have is when he disappeared, it was like, oh, well, we'll just go back to the way we were, and nobody seemed to care. But I think that also speaks to the Bajorans and how deep their faith is and how they're driven by it, that they were willing to actually try this D'Jara thing that he talked about. I mean, there's almost some comic relief in the fact that that Kira is trying to make these birds because her D'Jara is that she should be a sculptor. And you know, it was kind of silly, and it was amusing to me at least. But I really enjoyed this episode quite a bit. I didn't find it boring at all. I thought it went by very quickly.
See, that's what I'm struggling with. It's got everything in the right place. Why did it not connect for me? And I think that's ultimately the answer to the question. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It just didn't connect with me. But it clearly connected with you. So maybe then the fault isn't with the show. The fault in this particular instance is with me. And perhaps this just isn't necessarily a show that I respond to as an episode of DS9.
I don't think there's any fault to be put out there. I think, it's like every episode of every series, unlike people who criticize us on iTunes, your mileage can vary. You know, there's nothing that says that you have to like every episode. I think that's almost a silly premise to think you have to like every episode. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to criticize the criticism of us. But, I don't think you should feel like you're somehow failing because you don't like an episode.
But normally I'm able to justify what I don't like about it. And in this case...
And what you didn't like about this one is that you found it boring. It didn't engage you.
It didn't engage me, but there isn't actually anything wrong with it.
I'm on board with that. I don't really have a problem with you thinking that it didn't engage you.
Okay.
Right. I mean, this wasn't a particularly exciting episode. I mean, I will say that. I mean, it was at times a little bit slow, but I mean, it wasn't bad. But would it pass the channel flicking test?
It would depend on my mood. So we have three different levels on that. It would for me, it wouldn't for Andy, and it might for you depending on your mood. Mm-hmm. So we have three different levels on that, and that's fine. How many times have I said that I prefer shows where we have some disagreement, because otherwise it's just boring. I like this, I like this too. I hated this. Yeah, I hated that too.
I mean, I did like the O'Brien Bashir subplot.
I thought, you know, now I'm going to criticize a little. I thought that was a little too quickly resolved.
Yes, I was going to say, apart from the resolution and the fact that O'Brien can't tidy up his own house.
I accept the fact that Keiko's a wonderful wife who wants her husband to be happy. I accept that with, you know, very openly. But for her to heavy-handedly, you know, I saw him and he was depressed. You should go hang out with him. That was just silly.
I thought she really was subtle about it.
No, I don't think she was subtle at all.
Well, he wasn't subtle in his disdain for having to be there.
Although it was, yes, I thought that was fine. Yeah, when that was fine. When he's sitting there and he's like, I'll just stay here and read. And then she says, you know, well, Julian seems depressed. Well, that's because he doesn't have a good family life like I do. I thought that was good. That made me laugh. And that was him very heavy-handedly trying to, you know, pretend like he was happy sitting there reading. I thought that was fine. But her, you know, playing the, I'll tell you he's depressed, and I'll call up him and tell him that you're depressed. I thought that was a little silly. I think it would have been more effective if she had a true heart-to-heart moment saying, you know, Miles, I love you, I like you, you know, I like when we spend time together, but we need our own lives as well, and if you want to hang out with your friend, it's fine. Like, if she had just said that, it would have been okay, and then he would have said, okay, I'll see you in a couple of hours, I'm going to go hang out with Julian. And that, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But I think, you know, I don't know, just the playing the two against each other thing is just silly.
Oh, okay, I quite like that, never mind.
I would have liked to have seen Morn in a cockpit of a Spitfire.
Yes, that would have been amusing.
With the goggles on and the silk scarf flying behind him.
Like Biggles. That would have been funny, yeah. Okay, alright. Is that it? We done with this one then?
No, I was just trying to think for a second.
Well, I know that's difficult, fine.
Oh, you son.
I'm trying to think. And my head hurts.
Hey, brain hurts. I don't need this.
What is it you're trying to do there, Bill?
What are you doing there, Bill?
I mean, I like this episode, but now I'm like trying to come. Now and I do feel like Chris Farley, because I'm kind of like, yeah, it was great. Yeah, I got nothing. I mean, because it was. Oh, I know what. Okay. I knew there was a point I wanted to get back to. So, the one Vedic kills the mortician, who's now. Okay, so he was considered spiritually unclean because they prepared the dead. Why is that spiritually unclean? Because you buried the dead. I mean, that's...
What are you supposed to do with the dead?
But why would a priest murder a mortician? I mean, okay, it's not my quote-unquote society. It's a space society, so who knows what they are. I'm confused by your crazy space society.
That's kind of what I took it as. I don't understand what his motivation is other than he was misguided by what Hakuna Matata had said.
That was Vedic Porta.
But I didn't really have a problem
with his annoying little string angel harp. Bring, bring, come to service. Bring, come to sir. I can see Andy out there. Bring tea time. Bring tea time. Bring
Philip,
family.
Philip, it's time for service, Philip.
Oh, Lizzie. Shut around. Shove that harp up your ass.
Philip, later.
I do love when Philip and Elizabeth come to hang out with us for a while.
Who would have known that they would make it all the way to the 24th century?
Given that she's still alive, I wouldn't doubt it for a second.
Good point.
Sorry, I just looked at the photo for this episode. He's not the emissary. He's a very naughty boy. And of course, I did it in Lizzie's voice. He's not the emissary. He's a very naughty boy.
Well, actually, you should be doing it in Terry Jones' voice.
Yes. Yeah, so the guy, he just killed the guy because he was in the wrong... He was in the wrong de jure, and people are getting up and giving up their seats. I mean, I've never lived in a caste system other than I'm fat, and people look at me, you know... Oh, sorry, dude. I mean, I guess that's... You know what? This episode brings up a very interesting episode that... Did you watch the Orville this week, Andy?
Not yet.
Man, Paul, you didn't either, did you?
No.
This week's episode of the Orville deals with a society that they find that is remarkably like a parallel development thing like they used to have on Star Trek, that this particular planet is somewhere like equal to the 21st century Earth, and their entire democratic system is ran by a, wait for it, social media.
Ooh.
And you get up or down votes, and you are judged by... It is a ultimate democracy based on...
Wasn't this an episode of Black Mirror?
I don't know. I haven't watched all of that, so...
I'm sure there's an episode of Black Mirror that's like this. Vote,
and if you get above, like, 1 million votes or something, then you have to go on an apology tour and go on TV shows and basically apologize for what you did. And if you get above a certain level of no votes, then they basically lobotomize you, make you better for society. So it was a very interesting...
That sounds quite interesting, because live in a society where trial by social media is a thing.
Yes, then that was it. Even though it had the comedic moments, I'm watching this and I'm kind of like, very thought-provoking idea here. And it's kind of interesting that it kind of, not totally mirrors, but this whole, you know, with the whole caste system thing and judging by how, where you're supposed to be in society. So, yeah, okay, I connected this to something else. I'm smart. I make the show go.
Yes, you do.
So, yeah, I would highly seek that out. I believe
I'm downloading it as we speak.
Andy's on the ball.
It's on my DVR. I will be watching.
Yes, and you can skip right to it because you don't really have to have seen any of the other previous episodes, Paul. If you don't want to wait around for it, if you want to just go straight to it. So, yeah, that's it. The Orville was good this week. Yeah.
Well, so far, I'm finding the Orville to be an underrated show.
Me too.
Yep. Here. But we're not really concerned about what we think about the Orville.
What are we concerned about, Bill?
We're concerned about what Blaine think. Blaine. Wait, I got that right.
Yeah.
You know, sad thing is, this isn't scripted. What does he think about Deep Space Nine? What does he think about this episode?
Well, Blaine says, this one has me divided. There are three big...
Sorry, I'm just funny, because we're so divided, one of us is in the middle, the other two are on each side. So, yeah, okay, go ahead.
There are three big components, I guess that's us, that I look for in shared universe stories. As some may recall from one of my own podcasts, I like entertainment value, I like continuity, and I like a moving status quo. I like it when the writers use the story to convey a moral or message. This hits 2 out of 3 quite well. Sadly, it's the entertainment portion that got short end of the stick. Sounds like he agrees with Andy. The O'Brien pregnancy seems rushed and inconsistent with their recent marital troubles, likely because it was. I suspect a real-life pregnancy was the motivating factor, but that's getting into spoiler territory. For continuity, this was the push needed to get Sisko to embrace his role as the emissary, which is a rather giant shift in mindset. This, more than any other single episode, planted Sisko on Deep Space Nine because it's his chosen assignment rather than the assignment that had been forced upon him in the pilot. Up to this point, had Starfleet chosen to transfer him elsewhere, he probably would have done so. Now I think he'd fight a transfer. Finally, the message that this says a lot about faith versus religion to me. P- pure faith doesn't get people killed. It just gives them a particular point of view as the role of humanity in the universe. It's the religious doctrines humans have built around that faith that, when subjected to an interpretation that is rarely the original intended one, lead to injustice, abuse, war, and death. Oh, that's heavy, man. This episode doesn't go very far down that road, but it takes the first few steps. At least that's the perspective of this atheist. I love the things this episode has to say and what it means for the long-term development of the story. I just wish I enjoyed the execution as much as the implications. Sounds like Andy wrote it, almost, from the way you described it. I do like what he says about the implications of faith and religion and how that plays in this episode, because I think that's pretty accurate. They kind of touch on it, they hit on it, but they back off before they make a full assessment of it. But again, I found this to be entertaining. I didn't really have the problems that you and Blaine had, but you know, like everything else, your mileage may vary. I don't really, have a problem, and we're not really disagreeing on anything, except as we sat there watching it, this is what I thought. I don't really see any problems there.
Nope. Yeah, I think it's one of those times where Blaine's in kind of the same place that I am. I did like the faith versus her job, her religion, all of that stuff. There's nothing I can put my finger on to say that this was a bad or what I didn't like. It just didn't do it for me. That's it.
Oh, two other nice little touching moments in the episode was where they tell Worf that Keiko's pregnant. And Worf was like,
oh, yeah.
She's having a baby. He's like, now?
Yeah, that was good.
Because he had in the fifth season of the Next Gen, Worf had to deliver Molly.
Yeah. So, I will ask you firmly, yet forcefully, to push.
And then they tell him, well, she's going to have the baby in about 7 months. He's like, I will be unavailable at that time. I will be far away on Earth.
What I liked about that was O'Brien's typically male reaction, where he was just, yeah, okay, I'm fine with that. I'd be away as well if I had the choice.
Yeah.
Well, and we didn't really talk about that aspect of this. We talked more about the Julian relationship. But I remember when I found out that I was expecting each of my two children, who I was thrilled to have. But I do remember that first day when I first heard it and just being like, I don't know how to react to this, because it just, even though they were planned, it's still, when you found out, okay, this is really happening, it just, you just, for a moment, you feel like the weight of the world is on your shoulders. And I thought that was well portrayed in this episode by Miles. Like, you almost don't know how to react. You're happy, but you're so afraid of what the future is going to bring for you that you can't just totally embrace that happiness.
Because in a microcosm, in just a few milliseconds, and it spans into a few more seconds, and then you just suddenly put on 21 years of future problems. Not problems. Don't take this the wrong way.
Oh,
responsibilities.
No,
and things that can happen, and planning you have to do, and how things are going to change, and what am I going to do, and oh my god, and your mind is running, and fast forward, and you're like, fah! And
now, I was...
Oh, that's great, honey.
I'm just curious, and I don't want to go too much into personal lives here, but I was in my 30s when my kids were born. Andy, I think you were significantly younger than me when Michael was born.
Yeah, I was in my early 20s.
Yeah, so how did that feel for you? Because it might be very different from what I felt. Because I was a little bit more established in my life by then.
Yeah, we have said the only one we were actually ready to have was Anya. The only one we felt we were actually old enough to know what we were doing. But you just do the best you can with what you've done, basically. None of the three of them have turned out badly. I don't think we had a oh shit moment. We just were like, okay, well, we'll deal with it. Very pragmatic.
Yeah. So you guys are much more mature than me.
Angela is much more mature than me, and she made it all work, so...
I even, like I said, we had planned mine, and I was still taken aback when I found out.
Yeah, I was in my mid-20s, going on the backside of, you know, heading towards 30 when Katie was born. I mean, that was kind of planned. We had been trying, and then, you know, she came along, and, I mean, I was not established. I had only been out of the service maybe like a year, year and a half to 2 years, so still didn't really, was still kind of trying to find something to latch on to stay with, and, you know, it was a lot of changes, and, you know, it's...
Oh, yeah, it's...
And then when you had the second one, and you're like, okay... And then by the time Ben was around, it's like, okay, yeah, all right, let's just knock this out. We're done. Okay.
What I've often said is when your first child is born, no matter how much people warn you about how your life is going to change, you don't truly appreciate how much until they're born.
Nope. I think that's the only reason people keep having kids. If the next generation listened to us, humanity would die out in the next 30 years.
Well, the next generation never listens to us, so I don't think you have to worry.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that was touching... in the episode, more touching than the thing with Worf, was when Kira tells Sisko that she, you know, you need to interview Lieutenant so-and-so, I think he'll make a good replacement, and that's when he's like, what do you mean replacement? I don't know. I don't understand.
I don't know what
he
to
didn't
do.
Hyperventilate, but he almost cried because, you know, it's like... Well, he did get the soft-spoken Sisko voice, but he wasn't going real fast. He was like, oh, you know, he's like, could take your post, but he could never replace you. You complete me. Like they got to run towards each other. In slow-mo and hug. But that was rather sad. That was sad. Touching. Brought a tear to my eye.
Well, that's because you're a big softy, though, isn't it?
The tears of the prophets. The prophets, man. What a bunch of, you know... Maybe if the guys would explain things a little better, none of this would have happened.
Although I like the prophets. So should we kill him?
It was probably all in their big plan to, you know... Oh, we planned it that way, because we don't think linearly. Yeah, that's it. Nah, you guys are winging it. Prophets, my ass.
So, okay, I guess that's it for this episode. Do we have any mail to read?
Well, yes. We didn't give it ratings.
Oh, we didn't. You're right.
Yeah, so I...
forgot the format.
I am going to give this... I'm going to give this 3.25 call to service... harps for my rating. It's not the middle of the road. It was a little better for me than the last episode, but not, yeah, it still had a tinge of boredom, but okay. Still, yeah, that's where I'm at. 3.25 smash to the floor. Harps.
I'm going to go a little bit lower at 2.75. Like I said throughout this one, I couldn't actually put my finger on what it is that's wrong with it, or what I think is wrong with it, because I don't think there is. It just didn't connect with me for whatever reason, so I'm going for that.
Alright, I debated with myself over this one, because I like going with the half, but I don't like going the increments between the half.
I only did that because Bill did.
So, but I was kind of on the fence between 3.5 and 4.0 for me, because I rather enjoyed this one, and I probably could land at 3.75, but ultimately I generally just don't do that. So I ultimately went with 3.5, but it was a little bit of a I had to go back and forth on it a little bit before I landed there.
Oh, come on, do the 3.75. You know you want to.
No, you know.
Come on,
I'm
do
the keeper
it.
Of the spreadsheet. I don't do that, those things.
We'd have the first episode with all, like, not half, Come on, do it, do it.
If you're one of us, you'll do it.
Given the peer pressure.
So that's...
No, you're DiGiorno.
That's it for Ascension. And, do we have an email now?
Yes, we have an email. The email that we have, Defense of the Chief... in Hippocratic Oath from Johnny Joyner. Hello, Johnny. Dear gentlemen, first off, I want to congratulate you on another fine show and continual joy to my car driving experience. I listened in rapt attention to your discussion of the episode Hippocratic Oath, it being one of my favourite episodes and was the one that brought up questions that lingered and wrestled for a long time. I distinctly remember watching this episode when I was a junior in college, being struck by it. Now, part of the reason was because my college major was in security studies, and quite a few topics, especially concerning the Dominion War, were timely during my studies. But I digress, back to my defense of the chief. I like the idea that the Dominion War was part of his curriculum. That just amuses me. Johnny continues, number one, as for a direct order, I would find that problematic, since Bashir is medical and not a line officer, so his orders would be suspect, especially in a combat situation. Number two, Bashir has no command experience, while the chief is even considered by the Klingons as an expert in combat. Spoiler alert. Most young officers are told... I'm sorry? Are too told... Alright, most young officers are told... No, that's... I'm missing something there, aren't I?
Let me open up that email and see if I can...
Most young officers are too told and soon learn that it pays to heed the advice of the senior enlisted personnel. What do you think he's saying there?
Wait,
Old? Too fold? No.
I'm thinking just are told.
Are told.
Yes.
Right. Most young officers are told and soon learn that it pays to heed the advice of the senior enlisted personnel. Number three, then there is the problem of Bashir's arrogance, as so wonderfully articulated by Dax in The Quickening. Then one could argue that Bashir's hubris jeopardized the mission, which, as prisoners, is to effect an escape, so that an order the ranking officer might give could be considered unlawful. Number four, finally, as an experienced combat vet, the chief could have understood the idea of command and control, and the Jem'Hadar freed of Ketracel White could turn and break free of the Vorta and wreak havoc on the galaxy indiscriminately. The Ketracel White does provide a way for the Vorta, especially, to maintain control over a race genetically engineered as warriors. All that being said, I can find some good arguments for Bashir to find a cure. The most obvious one for me is, by providing a way, one could establish a resistance group to the Vorta / Founders, or even help instigate a full-blown civil war. Again, thank you for a great podcast. Sincerely, John Joyner. P.S. I agree that it is bad that they never really brought up any consequence for this later in the show. I really disliked how it seemed to have had created no changes in Bashir and O'Brien's relationship. Thank you, Johnny.
I totally accept what Johnny is saying there, and I do have to always acknowledge the fact that I've never served in the military.
If only we had somebody on the show who had.
But I still think you're obligated to...
Who could that be?
I think you're obligated to follow the commands of your superior officer.
Yeah.
And I think that if you don't, there are ramifications. Even if it turns out you were right. So, and there's nothing in here that says that he was right. Ultimately, it's still ambiguous at the end of the episode. So I don't think he could even say, well, I justified it because we're still alive and we wouldn't be had I listened to him. There's none of that. So,
well,
I get what he's saying, and I'm not saying I disagree with it. I just think, and Johnny even said, that there should have been ramifications when they returned.
Right. Well, one thing that he brought up in the email that was true when I was in the service is that we at one point had a new division officer, and he came down to our work center, and he was younger than we were. He was his name was Ensign Keeney, so we made fun of his name when he wasn't around.
You mentioned him before. I remember that name.
Did I? Oh, okay. Did I talk about it in the show? How maybe?
I don't know if you talked about it in this or Back to the Bins, but you did talk about him in the past. I do remember.
Yeah, and he basically came down and said, you know, he's like, I'm not going to tell you guys what to do in the aspects of your job, because you know that more than I do. He's like, you just do what you're supposed to do. I'll take care of the admin and keep people off your back. You just keep doing what you're supposed to do. I'm not going to interfere, you know, unless there's, you know, I have to for whatever reason. You know, he fully expected us to follow his orders, but he wasn't going to micromanage us, is what I'm getting at. So he knew what his limitations
different.
Were. He wasn't going
to. That's very different from him giving an order and you saying, "Screw that, I'm not listening
right,
to that."
Right. He's like, I'm not going to come in here and flip your whole world upside down just because I can. And yeah, because he was like 2 or 3 years younger than us, because we were like in our, we were like 23, 24, and he was like 21, just turned, you know, out of the academy and stuff. So, I mean, he now, I don't where he is today, if he stayed in, I don't know, you know, because there was other officers that were lieutenants and lieutenant commanders that were complete a-holes that, you know, I don't want to get into it. Let's just say, sometimes my humor was not appreciated when I was in the service.
let's just say there's a reason that the troops killed Niedermeyer.
Yes, exactly.
And with that...
with the dog...
Yeah, that's an indication that it's the end of the show.
I think so. So what are we doing next time?
The dog sings.
Yeah. Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, Worf goes on trial in Rules of Engagement.
No survivors.
441 Klingon civilians were killed.
No excuses.
Worf gave the order to fire. If I had hesitated, I would have been negligent.
No escape.
At this point, the only one who can help Worf is Worf.
On trial for murder.
Objection!
Will one deadly mistake
fire
be Worf's ultimate disgrace?
Oh, no!
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I'll look forward to that. And I'll look forward to being together with my buddies again, so I hope you all will look forward to that too, except for the person who thinks we hate the show. So, have a good
check
week.
Check out the Discovery episode we did. Just say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Check out the Orville.
What Andy said.
And what the dog said too.
She's out of control now.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
So I was just like, I just spin and just rebooted it and took a dump. Because I was so pensive and tied up at that point, I was just like, I gotta go to the bathroom now.
Are you at all familiar with the concept of too much information?
No, why do you ask?
No reason.